And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. And you guys don't need the headphones and unless and until people call in, which I think they will today, but we'll see. We have with us now for the next hour, Manny Sanchez, the chair of the County Commission, and for probably half hour of that, Annie Erzinghaus, who is a filmmaker and a loud opponent of Project Jupiter.
Yep. Yeah.
Let me start by asking you, Manny. I mean, people are obviously. Oh, actually, let me start by saying, don't call us for the next 10 minutes. Let us start our conversation with our in studio guests. After that, we invite calls. We invite hard questions to our guests, but they better be asked courteously. These people are our guests, and whatever you feel about them, button it up as if you were in court and ask your questions courteously, or you'll be gone. It also doesn't make any sense, because if somebody's out there listening who doesn't know Project Jupiter from a hole in the ground, if Manny's sitting here talking reasonably and you keep attacking him, as some people have said they might do, that really is going to make anybody who's listening kind of sympathize with Manny. And I disagree with him.
Well, I don't know that probably for a lot of people, they won't sympathize with me, but understand. But I appreciate that, Peter.
So there'll be zero tolerance. Jamie and I will, and our producer, Minerva Rivera, just won't permit people calling up to pointlessly insult or, yeah, whatever. So I hope I've said enough about that. Do you have any regrets about how fast you guys – I mean, you guys approved the basic Project Jupiter situation very, very fast without even the full documents in front of you. Do you have any regrets about how fast you decided it?
Well, I don't have any regrets of the decision. I think there's a perception that we went very fast, and I think – the reason I understand where people feel that way, because from when we went to publish to approve was, I believe three or four weeks. Now that's standard for an IRB. And so that we were following that process. So, you know, that from that piece of it, you know, there's that. So I understand how people may feel that way. Now the concern around missing documents, the issue is that IRBs, when we can prove them at that point, always have
industrial revenue bonds.
Industrial revenue bonds, thank you. Always have missing documents of some sort. I know that's what was claimed, was that there was blank pages, it was draft. Well, you know, if you went, we just approved one for a solar farm recently. There's missing documents,
but there were missing contractual provisions that you guys, I think improperly, and the courts will figure that out, delegated to the chair, which I think then was Chris, not you, but delegated to the chair, finished this up, and there were a lot of important provisions.
I guess when we say things were missing, I would question what you're saying, because I don't believe there were small changes that were done from when we approved to when it was closed. But the meat of what the agreement was and the provisions were generally the same.
Annie, why don't you tell folks your view of this?
I agree with you, Peter. I think that it felt like, and I was going to make a comment this last BOCC, and I wasn't able to. But that day of the vote, I felt like an ant. You know, I felt like I had no voice. I was not represented by my commissioners. I didn't have hardly any understanding about this project. And I think something that should have been known is, you know, how massive this was going to be. I mean, we saw the dollar bill number, and that's what kind of cued a lot of red flags. But needing the massive amount of electricity that it does, the massive amount of CO2 emissions that will come with that. What about water? What about, you know, so many question marks throughout that whole process.
And the basic fact for me was it should have used a lot of renewable energy. the guy who was the honcho when they were initially there looked right at me and said, we're going to – I said that, and he said, we're going to have about 60% renewable. Their people are already contracting. I thought he was lying to me. I gather there's been a change in who controls things, and maybe he was telling me the truth at that time. But I think you'd agree that basically, as initially talked about, their power plant would put as much CO2 and other bad things in the atmosphere as we and Albuquerque combined, maybe a lot more.
I see. I think that argument itself, though, there's a fallacy in that. And I ask, the reason I say that is
– what's the fallacy?
That we've said this. I see this a lot. How many power plants do you see in Las Cruces? How many power plants are in Albuquerque? And the reason I say that, there's two power plants in Albuquerque. One that's a peaker that generally doesn't run a lot, and the other. So when we say we're looking at combining the emissions of Las Cruces and Albuquerque and comparing it to a power plant, it's an apples to oranges comparison. Right.
This power plant would add an incredible amount of bad things to the atmosphere, right? The words that are coming out of your mouth don't really address that.
No, I just think you want to do an apples-to-apples comparison. Right. And that's what people try to do. And I've seen like Senator Steinborn, for example, say this is as much as so many coal plants and things like that. And the thing is like when you want to take one measurement and compare it to something else to scare people – it's one thing, but you got to look at the totality of what it is you're really what the comparison is about.
I don't even understand what you're trying to say.
It's like saying that, when we look at you're taking, like in this case, they're looking at CO2.
Yeah.
But what happens is somebody's saying, oh, that's as much CO2 as this. And so it's got to be as bad as this. That's why I'm saying like a coal plant. That Senator Steinborn tries to say, it may add CO2, but it also has sulfur oxides and all the other particulate matter, things like that that are not the same. So it's not a fair comparison. But I'm saying let's have a true comparison as to –
the point isn't the comparison. The point is this is going to add a tremendous amount of bad things to our atmosphere that contribute to our global climate craziness. I don't think you could disagree with that.
Could I ask a question kind of in the same era or, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of wrote this out and I wanted to frame it this way. So
I'm going to ask our caller to wait a couple of minutes. I wanted to start the discussion with the guests, but do hold on. We'll take your call in about 2 minutes.
So we already live in an area with like designated non-attainment zones. The Las Cruces El Paso region is rated 16th worst for high ozone, 27th worst for 24-hour particulate pollution, 31st worst for annual particle pollution when compared to some of other high metropolitan areas, according to the American Lung Association. So why is it a good decision to drastically increase our CO2 emissions, especially when this is going to exacerbate the climate change-related drought issues, water access, water security, and our already polluted air
good
here
question.
In the Southwest? Yep.
No, it's perfect. I think so. You exactly the details you just hit. CO2 doesn't have anything to do with the non-attainment numbers that we hit. You hit ozone. So you hit particulate matter. So when we look at the change that was done with Project Jupiter going to fuel cells, they dropped the
30%.
No, the NOx emissions went down 93%. And why is that significant? Because NOx is the precursor to ozone. So if we don't want to affect ozone, you don't emit NOx. If you don't want particulate matter, same thing. You don't combust that. And so what we see with those fuel cells is the particulate matter amounts decrease significantly. So what you're getting is not a huge, the contribution is significantly less with the change. And I think that's the critical part. Now, the greenhouse gas, understand, there's a couple of things I just want to highlight real quick with that. Because everybody is so focused about the permit numbers without understanding how the power generation is designed, where this is a 1.4 gigawatt facility, but they're building out 2.4 gigawatts. Well, where's that discrepancy? And the answer is it's in redundancy that's built into this. So they're asking to run the whole thing, but by
okay,
you know,
so it isn't as massive as it seems.
It is because they're building
still pretty big.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'll agree. You know, the greenhouse gas numbers is still high, and that was where we put the provision in the IRB to get to carbon neutrality by 2045. But they're going to have a way to get there, and that's something that is coming.
One more quick question before we take our caller.
Sure.
I think if you were protecting our interest, you would have said to these people, hey, we love you're going to add a few jobs down south part of the county. And, you know, we think that's great, and AI is a coming thing. But 60% renewable or go home.
Yeah.
That's what you would have said if you were protecting our interests first.
No,
that's my view.
No, and I think it's fair feedback. I think in when we did this IRB, and I think one of the things that we note is that the IRB is like in step one of this whole thing, step zero, step one, because even, you know, and we're trying to project out where we're going to be in step 10. And so what we tried to do was look at what other data centers were doing very poorly or had affected other communities. And so that's where we were focused on trying to get to carbon neutrality by 2045, not affecting electricity rates of the private ratepayers and limiting water usage. So we, you know, I think was there potential we could have done something differently? Perhaps. But I think we try to do our best to project that out by doing our research on it.
Good morning.
Get thou las cruces. Mr. Neil Downs here. Two quick things. I want to remind everyone listening that Mr. Manuel Sanchez is an MIT graduate. His expertise is in gas-powered turbine technology, literally. So for him to now backpedal so hard with the facts of the matter, and for this whole journey.
Let me ask you to skip the rhetoric. And what is he saying wrong to us? You say he's backtracking about the facts. What is he telling us wrong? Tell our listeners.
Well, it's more of the fact that the disclosure that hasn't been happening. Okay, the facts have been leaked to the public in little tiny droplets, while at the same time, in the same breath, condemning the process or the people or the developer. But this is disingenuous, because if you're an expert in the matter from MIT, you should have had this open discussion of the facts with the people as far as emissions go. And so now to say, well, we've got Bloom coming in with unproven technology, you're trying to save face by saying, hey, look, we have a savior here. But this is your industry. And just want to remind people of that.
Thank you very much, Neil. We have another caller.
Thank you.
And I think we will get back to a couple of questions that he raised. Yeah. But yes, good morning. Are you there?
Good morning, Manny, Peter, Jamie, listeners. This is Vince Kuchik.
Hi, Vince.
Called in on earlier things. My question is, there's a very significant chance of Project Jupiter going into default on various fronts. The IRB should have been written with plans for a default with protection for the county. Let me point out, the two financial backers of Jupiter have growing troubles. Oracle stock has fallen 50% in a year over investor anxiety and, you know, massive debt fund spending. It's been downgraded from BBB to BBB- by Standard & Poor's. Banks are refusing loans to Oracle and trying to
sell
some existing.
But the basic point, Vince, I take it, is that they did this IRB and they did not protect us against default, against whoever it is we're dealing with going belly up. Right? Is that what you're saying?
I am not sure what's wrong with the audio.
Okay, we can hear you.
Anyway.
We can hear you. Did you hear my question? No.
I will call back. There is some problem with the audio.
Great.
Here.
Call back
thank
in.
Thank you.
But, you know, Vince's point, and Vince was an early show host on this radio station when we first started. But Vince's question, I think, is did we protect ourselves against default by the...
Yeah. And I think, I guess I would ask and see, try to understand from Vince what his concern is in terms of where we're at. The reason I say is that the IRBs, the counties passed, puts no skin in the game from the county. There's no funds. There's no, anything from a taxpayer perspective. So in the meantime, if they go belly up.
So how does it hurt us?
It doesn't. I think the understanding would be is now we'll have a site that's been cleared, a very large site that's been cleared of any plant life. And
okay.
Where does that go? So
we have a caller, might be Vince again, but good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Brock Sandoval. I'm the CEO of a company called BioSustain New Mexico. We're a native plant group here in Albuquerque, and I'm super excited to have the chance to get to have a conversation with Manuel Sanchez.
Go ahead and ask him what you want to ask him.
Manuel, I'm curious, and thank you so much for your time this morning, if you're familiar with the term sacrifice zone.
I want to say I'm familiar with it, but if you might be able to help me with understand.
Could you also say it again so our listeners get clearly what zone you're talking about?
Yes, it's a term that's been used to describe some of the actions taking place in New Mexico that have ultimately led to environmental racism, degradation of the environment, and democracy that can generally overly be described as a sacrifice zone, people viewing parts of New Mexico or communities in New Mexico as sacrifice zones. And I'm a little concerned that you aren't familiar with that term, seeing as Project Jupiter is probably one of the greatest essences or efforts to make New Mexico a continual sacrifice
zone. I'm not familiar with the term either. Let me ask you to ask the question in a more concrete way that Manny and the listeners will get. What is it that you want to ask or
My ask question me? Was very simple. Are you familiar with sacrifice zones?
Well, he answered that. He's vaguely familiar. Is there a point to that you want to ask him?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What's the follow-up question?
The understanding the history of New Mexico as being seen through economic, seen through capitalist lenses would allow him to understand that Project Jupiter is a modern day extension of those sacrifice zones, that it sets a precedent for economic development over the well-being of the river, of the land.
So if you were to put that in plain English, and I don't mean to be impolite, just trying to cut to the chase here.
Sure.
If you were to forget about the zone for a moment and just say historically, capitalism and money has dominated New Mexico to the detriment of poor people, minority people or non-Anglo people, and rivers and wildlife, and this will do that more? Is that what you're saying?
I absolutely believe that. I don't think that the benefit will be for real New Mexicans at the end of the day.
I agree. Let's hear Manny's response.
Well, I understand the concern. I don't agree with that. And I think that's part of where, number one, where it was located. It was in the very southern part of our industrial zoned area in Santa Teresa, right by the border checkpoint, not by residential areas.
It did have to get changed. It did have to get rezoned to industrial. It was rural.
One small section of that area was rezoned, and it was in the very, I believe, in the south east corner, because it was one little piece of the property, but the majority of it was industrial. Now,
Manuel,
the other part is
because, pardon me, Manuel, just because something is zoned as industrial doesn't make it a biological void. There is certainly biological diversity out there in that industrial zoned plot.
I understand, but I think that's part of this job is understanding that if we, what is the option? Do we you know, do we not at all grow? Do we not develop? And if that means if we don't develop, that means we have no other jobs for our people, no other means of economic development. But I think I want to address one other piece is that—
Manuel, I don't have a lot of time with you today. Do you believe that the only way to develop is to develop economy in New Mexico is to do extractive industry?
I think one of the things that's been, you know, when we want to talk, we can talk about the water usage. We can talk about some of these other things because I will tell you there are other industries that use significantly more water in our area than this will. And I think one of the things that we want to look at when we talk about environmental justice in our – let me answer this. When we talk environmental justice in our community, we can look at Santa Teresa Sunland Park and the people that have to drink the Crua water. We talked recently about 2020, the arsenic in 2023, but that's a repeat issue from 2016. They have always struggled with that, and we don't get
money.
Let me
ask you one quick question about that. If Oracle comes in and they do this thing, and their plan not to use as much water as we fear, if something goes wrong, because as you know, people have pointed out, other people have pointed out today, we're all human, we make mistakes, who will get the water? Do you think the rich folks will get the water or the poor people will get the water? How's that going to work out?
Well, I mean, I think you want to look at it. I mean, it comes down to who's providing the water. At the end of the day, that is the county and it would go to the people. Yeah. I mean that, but I think the thing is like when you look at that's exactly part of the problem we have is that how do we get access to that community, more access to water? And we haven't been able to get funding from the state or the federal government. And that's why we wanted to take this, that $50 million that's going to go to water infrastructure, will go to being able to do a desalination plant. And we'd be the first in New Mexico. And we look over the border to El Paso, and they have all this technology that's been there for a while.
Thank you, caller. We're going to go to another caller. And before we talk to the other caller, Annie, do you want to address what we've just been talking about?
Yeah, I'd love to talk a little more. I think it's unfortunate that we have to rely upon these industries that are parasites, right? They come to areas that are struggling because they have the money to come in and be on top of this and fix things. When the industry we're bringing in is exacerbating the very issues of water security. So it's like we want to consume more, we want to desalinate, but at the same time, we're going to be using this water to produce more emissions that are making – that is like drying our area. So it's just – and for me, it's how do you know that we can trust these industries, right? Like how do we know that they're going to want to be carbon neutral? I know around the nation, they're going to try and figure out a way they don't need to get to that.
And but by the way, have you been shocked by the fact that they lied – to the NMED and sent in comments by people who didn't have comments? I'll come back to that. Yeah, but let's hear from the caller.
Wait, before we hear from the caller, I'm going to exercise my privilege to ask a question.
Yay.
Which is, I understand that last Friday there was supposed to be a detailed jobs report. Was there a detailed jobs report?
There was, yes. Now, the thing is that when people are going to see it, it's a lot of it is specifically the report that's being asked for is around the LEDA Act, the Local Economic Development Act funds. And so they don't have really any they haven't hired any full-time jobs. So it's going to say zero. That's for the different IRBs. Now, the construction, I haven't had a chance to look at, but they had submitted also the construction information. And so I'd have to go back and take a look at that as well. But they did submit it on time.
Okay. Because I was looking on Doña Ana County website for that information, couldn't find it anywhere. And I also want to say that I feel like they might be, Project Jupiter might be gaming the labor issue a little bit by hiring a bunch of people to accost people in parking lots and to go door to door trying to gin up support for Project Jupiter. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, they're being paid at least the New Mexico minimum wage to do that.
$25 an hour.
Yeah, okay. So that to me seems like they are trying to really juice the statistics, and I would like to get your reaction to that.
I mean, I don't handle their public outreach. You know, and how they've handled that. You know, I think what they're trying to do was trying to provide information, because what we see is that misinformation on Project Jupiter has been rampant. And people, I mean, there's a lot on social media that start to say, I just saw someone say they're going to use 9 million gallons of water per day. Someone said 5 million gallons of water per day. And none of those are right.
She asked, I think, a very pertinent question mm-hmm. there. Basically, it's well known, and I think you'd have to admit the facts, that these people they're paying a bunch of money to drum up support have, in some cases, they've said, hey, if you don't want to say something in support of us, give me your email so we can give you further information. And then that email turns up making a comment in favor of Project Jupiter. Yep. There are public officials that happen to. That well, taken – wait a minute. Taken mm-hmm. to that taken alone, is that wrong?
Well, hold on. Now, those public officials did not interact with the Project Jupiter I don't know what you call them, canvasser. They said they didn't see anybody, and their name was used without their approval. Now, I agree, I support, and I've come out in public saying this. I support the Attorney General doing an investigation on that.
Okay,
if that's what's found,
and if you we know, find that, that's wrong.
Abso-freaking-lutely. I mean, that's one of the things I agree okay. is that people's names should not be used inappropriately. All right.
Caller, you've been waiting patiently. What's your question? Are
hey,
you there?
Thank you, man. It's no problem at all. Commissioner Sanchez, my name is Trent Scrivener. I believe that we've met. My question was actually kind of to Peter's point about the fraudulent comments. I'd like to read real quickly before I get going with that a section from the Oregon Mountain News article about the
if it's the, very quick
identity theft.
If it's very quick.
Yeah, one guy, Johnny Acosta, said, I gave her my email, and the next day, that's when I saw the whole thing like I had written it. And so people who had their identities stolen by the project did interact with Project Jupiter yeah. canvassers. My question right. to you is, do you have any response for the New Mexicans who had their identities stolen by Project Jupiter, not just the public officials? And were Project Jupiter canvassers included in the numbers submitted with the job report this week?
Huh. So I think I'll answer.
I bet he doesn't know the answer to the second question.
No, I think no. I can answer the second question. No, they're not. This is construction okay. jobs that right. came from Stack, so that had nothing to do with the Project okay. Jupiter canvassers. Like I said, no one's name should be used yep. inappropriately. I think yep. that's where I support the investigation yep. by the Attorney General, and you know we'll see. Like I said, where that comes out.
Thank you very much, Trent. We have another caller on the line waiting. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I have a statement and also a question. I've been attending the meetings, and I just am really struck by Mr. Sanchez's disdain for constituents at the meetings and what appears to me an obvious resentment towards citizens exercising their constitutional and democratic rights. And it seems apparent to me that he either doesn't care or doesn't grasp or understand why we're angry. And I guess I would like to follow up that statement with a question to him, asking him why he thinks or right. if he has ever thought of why people are so outraged at him in particular.
Yep. Oh, I think this idea that there's a disdain for public input is just flat out incorrect. One of the problems that we have is that when you go to the meeting, you will see that we have had people disrupt the meeting and interrupt. And I have just called for making sure we're respecting people that when they come up to speak, whether pro, against, whatever, it doesn't matter, they have that opportunity. Now, well, I want to just clarify one point because this mm-hmm. may come up because I think I've explained to this caller why we've done this. We have, as part of our ordinance, we allow public input, general public input, mm-hmm. if it's not an agenda item. And it is up to the chair – to, you know, how much to devote to that. What we have seen is that our public input and our meetings have been getting longer and longer, and understand that, you know, there's people that want to come talk, but I've, you know, had made the decision that we were going to cap generic or general public input at 1 hour and trying to squeeze as many people in as we could. And that's at the up to the chair, because I do have an agenda to run. Now, just because people don't participate in public input does not mean they don't have an opportunity to talk with commissioners. Yeah. We can reach out via email, phone. I mean, I have a meeting with somebody else after I'm done here. I'm going to be meeting with someone to
let me agree with you about one point. I wish we all, whatever side we are on, would not talk over people who are speaking in public input. They may be lying or repeating lies they've been told to repeat. But some of those folks believe what they're saying as passionately as we do when we get up and speak. Jeer them or cheer them afterward, but let them speak as they should let you speak. And I just agree with Manny about that particular point. We ought to be disciplined enough to let each other talk. On the other hand, let me make her question more specific.
Yeah.
Last week, a lot of people got there expecting to maybe speak at public input. They got the news all of a sudden that there would be only 30 people and only 2 minutes apiece instead of 3 minutes. And it was a day when Oracle people were visiting. And the public input was going to be cut off that way. And somehow, maybe because the people they got bussed up there got early access, so that the first come, first serve was maybe 70 or 80% people in yellow vests bussed up by the Jupiter people saying the same thing. If I was there to say something important to you about Jupiter or about anything else, can you understand why I might get arrested instead of letting you continue your meeting? Why I would take that as you disdaining me to impress one of the 800 vice presidents?
Peter, could I also give some context as well, too? Just from my perspective, right, is the same thing, you know, day of public comment was
actually
changed.
Before you do it, let me just for legal reasons, or my producer will hit me over the head, let you all know that this is Speak Up Las Cruces on KTAL LP 101.5 FM, Las Cruces, New Mexico, and we love you.
Yeah, just to say, like, do you think it was fair to limit public participation to a handful of pro-Jupiter individuals who were bussed in, paid to be there, and allowed access to the government building before the doors opened at 8 a.m.? And again, our only power as, like, community members is the only power we have is our voice. We were not intending to get arrested that day. When our voice was taken away, so was our power stripped from us. And so when we came up and chanted, "Let us speak," we were calling for power back. We were calling for our elected officials to represent us.
Okay, so I just want to address this because I think one of the things that
no, sorry, I'm saying no to the caller. Yeah. Let Manny address this, and then
yeah, I. Like I said, as far as I was told by staff, it was opened at 8 o'clock. Nobody was allowed in.
They were going in at 7:45
a.m. Double question them.
Okay. So I don't know. I'll have to look into that. I was told by staff nothing opened up until 8.
Ask Tessa Beta.
Yeah. They were going in. We were there at 7:30. They were going in already.
Okay. When I asked staff, they said
– Can you understand, given this context, the nature of the anger?
I understand, but I think let's make something very clear. Before that happened, I stated at the very beginning of the meeting we were going to limit it to 1 hour. So, you know, I understand that's going to get people frustrated. But I have an agenda to run, and that's where we need to take care of that. You know, the other part is that even before we got to the point where we cut off public input, we had been disrupted multiple times. There were protesters that were threatening other people, because this is to the point of what it was. This is what's turned into this. Some of the opposition is intimidating people. They were harassing people of where they wanted to sit.
And that is not allowed. And that's what we see, to the point that I get people that are in support of the project that won't show up because of how they've been treated.
Got to agree that people should not intimidate each other. Caller, did you want to say something more?
I just want to comment that I am making my statement and question about every meeting that I've attended. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Manny really didn't answer my question, which is a question, which is an answer itself, because I don't think he's aware of his eye rolls, his clear, just really, he just ignores people. He'll feel like, I mean, you can just sense the annoyance in his eyes, his face, his reactions, and that has been throughout all of these meetings.
Thank you.
We're going
to go to another caller, I think. Good morning. Maybe not.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Hello.
Yes, this is Abby. This is a question for Manny.
What a surprise.
So a lot of callers have been speaking about what happened on the last county commission meeting with the sudden public comment change. I'll get straight to the questions. Do you believe that it was appropriate to escalate violence and to arrest people for essentially, you know, their freedom of speech? And was that influenced by the Oracle people being there? And will you be dropping those charges for the arrested?
I think, number one, I didn't call for people to be arrested. I think if you heard me in the meeting, I asked for them to be removed from the chambers because we were trying to continue that meeting. The second item, I don't know. That's going to be determined by the district attorney. The charges were filed by DASO as they see, but yeah, I guess as they deemed appropriate. You know, so I'm not.
We did see on video a certain security guard. I won't name him, but I had already written a column about him basically making decisions for the county, which is not good.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. My other question was, that security guard, and he's just a security guard who threw down a tiny woman, right, not once, but twice. Will he be fired or will he be receiving any consequences?
I can't speak for that. We're not his employer. He's a
Let me suggest you contract with his employer.
Yes.
We won't name them either. But he has done at least four things that I could list. I won't bore people with them now, that are actionable, that people could sue you and get our money out of our treasury for his bad conduct. If you're not telling the entity he works for, I don't want to see that guy again, you're not doing your job for us.
No, I think that's where I was going to get to was, you know, I think we have made that, you know, and he
made
won't.
That
I don't think
you have made that clear.
Correct.
Okay.
But the other part was, and I don't know I've whether this has ever been in writing, was that security concepts
okay.
They're our contractor. I mean, anybody could look that up.
Yes. No, it's not a secret. I was
and I'm
just
not
being polite.
You know, I don't know how it's been communicated, but I think we had told them that it is the security guards are not to
put hands on people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that alone was up to any of the enforcement. We leave that to the sheriff and DASO. And that's where it went. And I know, like I said, I think that's where, you know, specifically you won't see that security guard. We've reiterated
good
our good. That with
that
the
was a security. Thank you, caller. Next,
I have another question.
Yes, Jamie, and then next caller.
So have you guys thought, since you want to make the public comment only be a certain amount of time, have you guys thought about making a pro Project Jupiter, anti-Project Jupiter, and some other commentary that has nothing to do with it list, and taking one person from each?
I think is – so I'll say, given what happened this after that meeting, we've had some kind of brainstorm to try to figure out how do we make sure this doesn't happen again. I mean, we don't want – this escalated way beyond what we wanted. We never want anybody to be arrested or any violence or any – that's not what we want. So you're – yeah, I think one of the ideas was kind of coming up with that. Could we create a line, you know, if you're here for Project Jupiter, for or against or just in general, and how do we
just how alternate address it? Between the three lines.
You know, part of it, we didn't want people lining up. Like that was part of also the signing up. But – yeah, it's an idea that's been tossed around. I don't know yet how we're going to address it, but I think it's a it has merit.
Let me say for the record that although I understand your frustration with not being able to get to the rest of the items, personally, I object strongly to cutting it off. I think if you've done something that makes people so upset that they're all going away from what they should be doing at 9 in the morning and showing up to tell you how they feel, you owe it to the community. I know it's painful, and I admire you guys for how long you sit there sometimes, but I think you owe it to them to hear them out.
Well, here's going to be a very unpopular thing I'm going to say. The Open Meetings Act in New Mexico does not require public input during a meeting. It's always done as a courtesy. And, you know, and that's something that we've always ensured. We've tried to ensure that we have that. We've seen local governments in the area completely stop public input. That's not what we've ever wanted to do. We're not going to do. But I'm just trying to point that out is because I've heard people say you're impeding my First Amendment right.
Let me shorten this a little.
Yeah.
I agree. It does not. And I didn't say it did.
No.
I think you owe it to people. But – yep. Next caller, are you there?
Hello, Peter.
Yes.
Hi there. My name is Giovanni Sebastian Hernandez. I'm the campaigns manager for the New Mexico Dream Team, one of the state's largest youth-led immigrant advocacy organizations. I live and work in Las Cruces and primarily work with undocumented immigrants and queer students at the high school and college level. And I have a question for Manny.
Go for it.
Hi there, Manny. It's good to hear you speak on some of your perspectives. I have a question. Last year, I got to watch you and the rest of the county commission vote unanimously to pass a resolution to make Doña Ana County a safer space for immigrants and undocumented people. As we know, this is very important for folks interacting with their local governments. I am a child of immigrants and have had in various times had to, you know, interact with government on behalf of my parents or my grandparents. And it was a very stressful situation, all while not knowing whether or not we'd face repercussions for their status. So I wanted to bring that up for some context. I wanted to ask you how you can, you know, and I remember you very bravely saying that you will take a stand, that this county commission takes a stand against ICE, and that Donald Trump can try to do what he wants with our communities, but at least this commission will be fighting against that. I want to know how you square that stance that you shared last year with doing investment and business with companies like Oracle and OpenAI, both of whom who have donated more than $75 million to Trump's super PACs, and as a result,
okay.
Have
good
enabled
question.
Donald Trump
good
to
question.
And,
good,
new
good question.
People
thank
in
you.
Las Cruces. Thank you.
Yeah. I think that's always, you know, from the outside looking in, that's where it's at. But I'm looking at the project. I look at projects on the merits. And specifically, you know, we're not there asking where companies donated or didn't donate to, et cetera. Well, I mean, that's what it just comes down to.
Gotcha. Let me sort of follow up his question very briefly. Are you open to having the county consider not investing in entities that do racist things or support ICE?
I mean, I would say depending on what it is, maybe that would affect where I would go. Yeah, okay. I mean, I like I said,
all right. Good.
Excuse me, Peter. One last question for Manny, if that's okay.
Sure, quickly.
Hi there, Manny. I want you to know, I want to tell you a very brief story, excuse me, Peter, of a family who I know in Southern Doña Ana County who have had to hide, be in literal hiding from ICE these last few days.
last few months, excuse me, as a result of Donald Trump's deportation agenda and machine that has been exacerbated by millionaires and billionaires that own companies like CoreCivic and Geo Group.
All right. Both, I'm going to ask your question or we'll go to the next caller.
Excuse me, Peter. I appreciate that. So, Manny, I would like to know what you have to say to them, to those families, to let in regards to you, this county allowing a company like Oracle and OpenAI that invest in Donald Trump and donates his campaign operate within our county. What do you have to say to those families?
Thank you.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I'm not, you know, when we look at companies, part of that, you know, discussion is not specifically, you know, where they make campaign donations to. I understand their concern about this administration, and they've done some really horrible things. And I'm not, we can probably get into that. And we talked a little bit about,
maybe
earlier.
Maybe we'll have you back for an hour.
Yeah.
You
know, but I think at the end of the day, you know, this Project Jupiter is not specifically around ICE or doing anything that's related to immigration enforcement.
His point is,
how do we know, too?
It's to the profit of a company that has helped Donald Trump along and helped ICE along. And
we have no way of knowing what that data in this data center will be used for at all. So we can't say it won't be used for ICE.
One more caller, I think. Are you there? Good morning. Going once.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello. I'm having a hard time hearing y'all, but hopefully I can get my question out. My name is Fernanda, and I'm wondering about Manny, the board's plan to hold the Project Jupiter people accountable, what their plan is. I know they came to the last meeting and they said a bunch of nice things about their promises. But we've had Lynn Moore, who is a local resident, suggest a bunch of things that the board can do, like getting a court reporter so that there's a clear record that's enforceable. The last time I spoke to her, she had not heard back from you all when she sent information about the board.
Let me step in there. You may not know that yesterday at their work session, the commission heard from Lynn. Lynn made a great presentation, and she suggested a citizens group be appointed to kind of monitor what these folks do, that the citizens group be required. It would be appointed each commissioner would appoint two people. And Manny would appoint a third person, so there'd be an odd number, and it would be required that they have people from different positions on that citizens committee, and people can apply for that. And that's on the agenda for next meeting. Are you going to vote for it?
I mean, I support it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question is it's very possible, even probable, that the county is going to appoint a citizens commission to monitor Jupiter on the things you're talking about. So
you all are cutting out for me still, but my question was more related to the court reporter and making sure that the things that the Project Jupiter folks are saying to us at these public meetings are enforceable to some degree. Can you comment on that?
The things they say on public meetings like that are recorded on video, so anybody could have a court reporter transcribe them.
Yeah, and I think that was something still that Lynn had made, was that she did want a court reporter as part of it and record it so that people could watch it. So
I'm in favor of it.
Now, just to back out one level of specificity, I know that your support of Project Jupiter, as you've said, has to do with economic development, and I am just wondering what sort of economic development you see this bringing to the South County. Like, what is the benefit?
Yeah.
What
we're seeing right now, or the numbers we're seeing in terms of direct benefits. So we'll talk. You know, the PILT payments is $12 million per year for 30 years. So total of $360 million throughout the lifetime. And I know people say that's not a lot, but that's about 6% of our operating revenue currently that will give us a bump for the county. We're going to be getting the $50 million for water infrastructure. Within the direct spend GRT for construction, the county specific share we're anticipating will be about $240 million up through year three. And There was the additional payment. So overall, we're looking at you know, the project and contributing you know, well over $600 million to the county now. And then on the state level, I mean, they're getting, you know, their share as well. But, you know, then you have the indirect spend. And the indirect spend is, I think we had a report back then. I had to go back and look at my numbers. But Chris Erickson from NMSU had given us a report about what he had seen was that the indirect benefit to the surrounding businesses, you know, from people going out to eat in the area, restaurants, purchasing of supplies, things like that. And so it's
how
pretty
much
significant.
Is going to El Paso, right? I mean, El Paso is much closer. Texas is much closer. How much of that is not even coming to Las Cruces?
No, I mean, there's going to be some of that. I mean, but I think that's what we need to see is that understand that, you know, we need our requirement or where our focus was Doñana County first. But we know already that, say, for example, Foxconn had a huge contract to provide the server racks. And that's literally, you know, a mile or two away just over the border. So we know Ciudad Juarez, El Paso and Las Cruces, Doñana County are all seeing benefits overall from this. So it's not, I think that's something we, you know, I understand, and I understand the concern because I think there's a lot of concern that we're going to get a lot of workers from El Paso and we're not going to get New Mexicans. And I think that's.
You're also not going to get as many workers as you think you're going to get. I'd make you a side bet that whatever they're saying will be the permanent employment ain't going to happen.
Well,
but it'll be fewer people based on what happens at other data centers.
Well, the 750 full-time employees is a requirement per their, and that's not in the IRB, but the LEADA documents.
Good.
So it is in writing, the 750 full-time.
Let us take one last call. I think there's a caller on line. Good morning. Good morning. Going once. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I can barely hear you, but I wanted to say, you know, looking at the events that happened at the last meeting, you know, it seemed like there was a complete failure of leadership on Manny's part. He could have done many things to de-escalate the situation.
What would you have specifically suggested?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you great.
Okay.
What would you have suggested
he could have changed the time limit, allowed people to have the 3 minutes that they were prepared for. And when the disturbances broke out in the front, you know, they were actually leaving the dais, and they could have just got out of the room. He didn't need to insist that protesters be removed. You know, protesting is a, you know, kind of a sacred thing in terms of our political process. It's the thing that, you know, helped make the civil rights movement move forward, that helped end the Vietnam War. Politicians may not, you know, like it. It might be annoying, but they have to tolerate it. And to escalate it to violence is just a total failure of leadership.
Let me ask you a question. If you can hear me, let me ask you a question on Manny's behalf. Hello?
My question is, why hasn't Manny resigned? He shouldn't be the chair.
Okay.
And he probably shouldn't be on
the question. Manny, why haven't you resigned?
Well, I'm not, you know, I represent my people in District 5 and I don't have any plans to resign or step down from chair. I appreciate the feedback. And like I said, I think as Jamie asked earlier in terms of, you know, what we can do differently, those are things, like I said, we're going back and taking a look to see how we can approach the situation so we don't have that same issue. I did want to just, if I can, and I know this is kind of pivoting back. I know, Jamie, when you asked about the decision, you know, from an economic development standpoint, I'd want to just add is that when we made the decision, it wasn't specifically only economic development. That was a big part of it. But we were trying to figure out, could this be done in a manner that would, you know, we feel would not be a huge detriment to the environment as well. And that's why we tried to put those protections in the IRB. I understand. I think, like Peter, like you said, why didn't you put in the requirements for renewable or do things like that? Mm-hmm. You know, I think – that, you know, we, like I said, we were focused on that 2045 deadline. And I think one of the other questions that came up was, you know, I think one of the other callers said, well, they had all these, you know, details that we had. Well, when you're in step one, you don't have the power generation plan. You don't have a lot of these requirements. And right, wrong, that's how the IRBs work, is you're always in step at the very beginning and you're trying to project out, you know, for the life of the project. And we didn't have those details. It really wasn't until they submitted the NMED, or the first NMED air permit, that we saw what their plan was and how they planned to mitigate. They did tell us in the discussions that how they planned to mitigate the emissions, but, you know, it wasn't all the details until you see it in writing on an air permit.
I just say, Manny, this is detrimental to the environment. This is detrimental to our future. I mean, they've already used 74 million gallons of water since April 26 just for construction. We don't even know before that when they started construction in September 2025. And just to talk a little bit about like public comment and public meetings, we can meet with you, right? But we cannot hold you publicly accountable in your office. You know, you're paid to be at these meetings. We miss work to come and talk to you, right? And you're talking about intimidation from us as people who are being there. The massive amount of security presence and security guards outside after the one day we protest, there are now 4 security guards outside every time who are not to touch us, right? So what are they there for? They're there to intimidate us. And so now there's this sense of violence surrounding. I mean, there's just so much. I hope you understand like why we're angry, right? Our voice is our power. And when that is taken away, it is natural to feel this sense of like smallness, this sense of anger, sadness for the representatives who are not representing your constituents. And that's a question for you always for me is, how do you know you represented your constituents when we didn't even have the information?
Yeah, and I shared, right? I have community meetings in my district and that's how I know. I mean, I generally hold my meetings in Doñana, Radium Springs, Garfield, Hatch. I'm out there talking to people. And I think if you look at my record in terms of all the commissioners that have been out in the community, I have been the one that has been the most visible in my community. Now, you know, I think the other side of it, when we talk on intimidation, what we have seen is, you know, we have these wanted posters that were put out with us. It doesn't say, you know, it's not death threats. But we have seen people, other county commissioners across the U.S. be shot for approving data centers. We've already seen political violence here in New Mexico, and people think it's wise to put these wanted posters up. I mean, those are the types of things. This is the rhetoric that becomes dangerous. I understand where people get frustrated. Now, if I would have just simply, you know, we talk on people that show up to the meetings and we're not listening to the public. If that was the case back in 2020, I would have voted with Commissioners Isabella Solis and Commissioner Gonzalez to not approve the results of the election in 2020. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody recalls that. Or when we voted to support for the red flag law resolution to support it, I would have voted against that. I mean, like I said,
no, I had forgotten that some of our commissioners actually argued that we should not approve the election results.
Yeah, it went 3-2 that day.
Well, that's hope you can come. We didn't even get to the audit and the things that you folks are doing or should be doing to correct that. But I hope
I'd love another opportunity to come and talk more about that.
I want to thank both of you for being with us, Annie and Manny. It should be the Manny and Annie show.